Hey kids, how's it going? I am Jeffrey X. Martin from Biff Bam Pop, and this is yet another installment of Songs in the Key of X, where I take five of my favorite songs that are all related in some fashion and make my case for why you should listen to them. Not doing that this time around, though, because for the first time, there's a guest here in Studio X. He is the founder and editor-in-chief of Biff Bam Pop, and he is the priest of the temples of Sirius XM in Canada. The digital man himself, Andy Burns, is here. Hey, Andy.
Hey, bro. That was good, man. You got a good couple of references in there. I like that. That was excellent.
Now, Andy and I are both big progressive rock fans. We are prog boys, and we could sit around and talk about Rush for hours and not even break a sweat. But for this episode of Songs from the Key of X, I let Andy pick his favorite five Rush instrumentals. So, how's that for kowtowing to the man, huh? Rush, of course, are the greatest power trios in the history of rock and roll, but not everyone likes them. What is up with that, Andy?
Well, let's be realistic. The dulcet tones of Geddy Lee, they are an acquired taste. You either love him or you don't. And I think Rush would be the first to like agree that, you know, Geddy's voice is what was it? Was it the there was a Pavement song, right? I think it was a Pavement song about where they say, how does Geddy Lee sing that high or sing like that? I'm pretty sure it's Pavement. You correct me if I'm wrong or if you find out the info. But, you know, so you've got Geddy's voice and, you know, I used to be, and this is a master group of musicians, right? To take out Geddy's voice, for instance, my ex-wife hated Rush, but when I would play her the instrumental, she was like, yeah, I would like them if he didn't sing. And, you know, it's an acquired thing. What are you going to do? But you've got, you know, Geddy as a bassist is one of the greatest bassists of all time. I used to say, you know, the amazing bass power of Geddy Lee, the percussion power of Neil Peart, the adequate guitar stylings of Alex Lifeson, which is always a joke. It's always a joke. And the thing too is, and this is one of the things, like you really do have in Rush, you've got three virtuosos, and unfortunately, Alex Lifeson does often get overshadowed because of the incredible ability of the groundbreaking ability of both Geddy and Neil. But this is actually, you know, this is a group that they are all incredible at what they do, all of them, you know, like,
Can I just break in real quick and say you just compared Rush to Grand Funk Railroad? I love you for that.
Well, look, I mean, at the end of the day, Rush, you know, Rush is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as they should be. Multi-platinum, like gold and platinum records from the US, huge in Canada. You know, like they're so revered here in Canada. And, you know, over the years in my radio career, I had the chance to be a part of interviews with Geddy and Alex and be in the same room with them. And you know, they really are an incredible band. That's not to everybody's taste, but as we've seen over the years, they've been huge. And, you know, one of the things it's kind of worth noting is, you know, like they are all over Canadian rock radio. Some of those reasons are because of Canadian content, but that's a really minor reason. Like they have just been embraced over their, you know, over the 40 plus years that they've been around as, you know, I tend to think of them as kind of like Canada's greatest export. So it's cool. We're going to talk instrumentals, you know, that up here got actually played on the radio regularly. One track in particular that we'll talk about, which may be surprising to some, but yeah, I mean, this is a band that writes great songs, long songs, songs that can go on for 10, 12 minutes, but also like be really, you know, condensed and memorable. So yeah, I guess we'll just get into it. Right, brother?
Yeah, let's do it. We're going to go ahead and start in on number five.
We'll be right back.
Where's My Thing is from the album Roll the Bones. It's an instrumental track. You know, so as a young guy, you know, as a you know, when Roll the Bones came out in 91, I was 14 years old, and I really didn't know. I was no Rush expert, and then Roll the Bones came out, and it had, I believe, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but it had one of, if not your favorite Rush songs on there, Dreamline. Is that am I right about that?
Yes, that is my favorite Rush song ever. I love that song.
Okay, and that was, you know, a huge rock radio hit. But here, you know, Dreamline got played a ton, but at around the same time as that was acting as a single, Where's My Thing was also released, and it was here in Toronto, the big rock radio station that I was actually privileged to work at for about 6 years, it was then Q107. It still is Q107. They would have the top 10 at 10 where people would call up and, you know, request their 10 favorite new songs. And at around that time when Roll the Bones came out, you'd hear Roll the Bones in the top 10, you would hear Dreamline, and you would hear Where's My Thing. It was my first exposure to the instrumental side of Rush, and to me, it's a classic to this day.
Where's My Thing was nominated for a Grammy here in the States for Best Rock Instrumental in 1995. It lost to Eric Johnson's Cliffs of Dover, which later became a staple on the Guitar Hero video game. Roll the Bones also has probably their first and, well, their only rap song, rap part, which I think they were immediately embarrassed by, but at least had the good taste to make fun of it in their live shows.
Can you do the rap?
No, because those are huge words, and that's like a Neil Peart written rap. And I think that's the reason people don't like Rush, is because Neil Peart's got these big grand concepts and sci-fi lyrics, and he wants to talk about mystic rhythms and other planets and shit all the time. Kind of amazing.
Jack, relax. Get busy with the facts. No zodiacs or almanacs. No maniacs and polyester slacks. Just the facts. Gonna kick some gluteus max. It's a parallax, you dig.
I'm amazed. I think there's a real huge funk influence to this song until those ethereal keyboards kind of kick in. But I also... Do the keyboards remind you a little bit of Nick Rhodes' work in Arcadia? Or am I kind of talking out my ass here?
You know what? I can't say, because I never spent any time with the Arcadia album. It was, you know, it just both, you know, I know the Power Station stuff, but I never, and I should probably go back and listen to it because I'm a big Duran Duran fan. But, you know, for me, in really my appreciation for Duran Duran, I love them as a kid, you know, like being that like sort of 7, 8, 9 year old. But I, you know, and I don't know if it's a Canadian thing or not, or if it was just my age range, but I just never got into Arcadia. I never went back to listen to it, so I can't say.
Fair enough. Let's move on to number 4.
In 2007, Rush released Snakes and Arrows. And I remember talking to a colleague of mine who said, this album is the best album they've done since 1980. And I was like, get out of here. Get out of here. Like, it's not, you know, it's not possible, right? And then I listened to Snakes and Arrows, and amazingly, it was the best album they had done since 1980, in my estimation anyway. First, you know, you had Far Cry, which was such an incredible rallying cry. That those chords, those quintessential Alex Lifeson chords, I may have sort of poked fun at him off the top, but the truth is he's an incredible guitar player. So you had so many great songs on there. And then you had three instrumentals. The first of which is a 6-minute track called The Main Monkey Business. And, you know, the band toured it on Snakes and Arrows. They toured it in subsequent tours. There's a lot of love for it. And it just, you know, it did and does what the best instrumentals, the best rock instrumentals do. And it takes you on in, you know, it's going to sound a little cliched, but it takes you on a bit of a journey, right? Like, that's what instrumentals are supposed to do. Like, in The Main Monkey Business does it. And now, if you're wondering why it's called The Main Monkey Business, when I was working at Q107 and we did an interview with Getty and Alex about the album, about Snakes and Arrows, Getty talked about The Main Monkey Business was a term that his mother used for, essentially, she was talking about some acquaintances of their family. I think it may have even been their family, and she said, you know, they were up to some monkey business. And Getty was like, well, what do you mean monkey business? What kind of monkey business? The Main Monkey Business.
Oh my God.
It's a great title, and it's a great rock instrumental. It's certainly a great Rush instrumental as well.
I love the fact that Getty's mother sounds like Robert Loggia. The Main Monkey Business. Main Monkey Business is their second longest instrumental. The original version was 18 minutes long, and they cut it down to 6 to fit on Snakes and Arrows. I love anything with a 12-string guitar.
Yeah, so for
sure. Pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great for me. Nominated for nothing. No awards whatsoever. You just got to have to know that this exists and listen to Snakes and Arrows and be happy about it.
But the next song on our list was nominated for something, wasn't it?
It was. And it also lost. So let's go on to number 3.
Number 3 on our list of our favorite Rush instrumentals. Malignant Narcissism. I freaking love this song, and I love it because it is so simple. Neil Peart is playing like this tiny, tiny kit.
It's a 4-piece, right?
Yeah, I think it was a 4-piece.
Yeah.
Geddy Lee is playing a Jaco Pastorius fretless bass, and the guys just, you know, it's a short, catchy instrumental that still managed to show how good they are, like this, you know, the power of Rush. And it's, you know, one of the things that appeals to everybody about Rush, or, you know, like so many of the diehards, is the magnitude of the music. And, you know, Neil's got like, you know, 14 drum kits that rotate when he plays live, and, you know, all the different basses, and, you know, but give Neil Peart 4 drums and he still sounds like Neil Peart and can do amazing, beautiful things. It's a very cool song. Malignant Narcissism takes its name from a phrase in Team America: World Police. And now once again, it's a song that, you know, it's not going to get radio play. You know, to the best of my knowledge, it really didn't get spun. But as a Rush fan, it's very memorable.
It's just one of those things that shows you can take away all the trappings of being a huge rock band. You can take away Neil's 48-piece kit. You can take away, you know, Getty's standard bass and replace it with a fretless and still get a fantastic piece of music. This was nominated for a Grammy in 2009, once again, for Best Rock Instrumental, and it lost to Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen's Once Upon a Time in the West. I don't understand how that happened.
God bless the boss, right? Like, I'm a Springsteen fan, but, you know, I would just...
But come on.
I know. I hear you. I'm assuming it was very moody.
Had to have been it. Oh my God. All right, let's move on to number two. We had a hard time deciding between first and second place, but we'll go on to number two, and this is it.
La Villa Strangiato from the album Hemispheres, which, you know, oh, you know what, we should mention this, Jeff, is one of the reasons we thought to do this is that it's Hemispheres 40th anniversary, and there's a big box set that will be out by the time people get a chance to listen to this, or a couple days, it'll be out a couple days later, Friday release days.
Right.
And La Villa is, I mean, and I always call it La Villa. Like I never go, you know, through the whole name. La Villa is the closing track on the album. Multiple parts, a song that longest instrumental in the Rush catalog, and at 9 minutes 37 seconds.
It's actually 3 years, 8 months, and 22 days long.
Woo!
That's a you know, long song.
It's just one of those songs. Once again, like the best prog rock or the best rock instrumentals. It really does take you on a journey.
There are 12 different sections.
Well, I know. And, yeah. You know, they managed to all be a little different. It's a staple. It was a staple of so many Rush concerts. There's a amusing version that Rush did in Rio, in the Rio record, where Alex Lifeson does his, you know, he kind of goes off tangent a little bit on in the performance, something that he, you know, did often when it came to that song in particular. But for a lot of people, that is the definitive Rush instrumental. And I'll tell you this, part seven, Danforth and Pape, is, about 7 minutes from where I live currently.
Oh, wow. That's an address.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a real place.
Huh. Now I can't help but wonder if this song was the inspiration for Spinal Tap Mark II's Jazz Odyssey.
It could very well have been. I don't know. You'd have to ask Derek Smalls because he wrote it.
All right, let's move on to number one, shall we?
So this was interesting, right? Because you and I talked about it, and what I said about the song is I said it's a rock radio staple, at least here in Canada. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've never heard it on the radio.
Never ever have I heard this on the radio. US radio, as far right. as this market and as far as Rush goes, we have three songs off of Moving Pictures and two off of Signals that actually get played. And that's it.
Okay. Well, we have a lot more than that up in Canada.
As well, you should.
And, you know, it was when it came for, you know, my pick for number one was pretty easy. It was YYZ from the Moving Pictures album. This is played all the time on rock radio here in Canada. It is the airport code for the Toronto Pearson International Airport. And, you know, interesting, the bam, 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 that's 5-4 rhythm. That is the Morse code for YYZ. I'll tell you a little story, a very, very brief story. But, you know, when Guitar Hero was all the rage and I was working in at Classic Rock Q107 here in Toronto, our afternoon drive host was a Canadian rock legend named Kim Mitchell. I don't know if you've heard of Kim Mitchell down south, but he was the frontman for an amazing sort of rock, very just an incredible band called Max Webster. And Max Webster was on Rush's label. They were on Anthem. They toured together. Kim went off on his own, Kim Mitchell. And I don't know if you know the song Go for a Soda, but that was his kind of his main U.S. hit, and it did okay. Kim is an icon in Canada, and he worked at Q107. And when Guitar Hero was all the rage, and you could play YYZ in Guitar Hero, he and I had a Guitar Hero battle that we filmed. which was so intimidating because even though it's Guitar Hero, this guy is a virtuoso player. He's one of the great musicians Canada has ever produced. Maybe, you know what, maybe we'll find the video of us and we'll put it into on the website. But the song that we played together was YYZ, and it was pretty incredible. And this song, you know, it has been on multiple live Rush albums. I highly encourage people to listen to the version that is on Rush in Rio, because you get to hear 40,000 people sing along with an instrumental, which is just like, it's ludicrous in the best way possible.
See, now my favorite version of this song is from Exit Stage Left, which is, was that late 70s, early 80s, probably 82, 83. I think that is so good. You get Neil's drum solo right in the middle of it, and it's just thrilling for me to hear that. Now, we chose the studio version, the Moving Pictures album version, to use in the article, and that's fine. This song also nominated for a Grammy for Best Instrumental Performance, and it lost to Behind My Camel by The Police, because nothing has ever made sense.
Well, you know, it is The Police. You know, at least they're losing to, at least they lost to another classic trio. What, are you down on The Police?
I am. No, I'm down on Sting. I'm down on Sting, everything after the Soul Cages, okay? I'm really high on Stuart Copeland. I love him as a drummer.
Absolutely.
He's got those little tiny, tiny cymbals that I think they're just like Barbie cymbals. They're just darling. I think he really, I don't know. I love Stuart Copeland, but Sting can go to another place. That's okay.
So what you're saying, so you've lost your faith in Sting?
You know what? I didn't think that would happen. But that's okay. So that's your number one. I'm going to throw something else in. I'm going to throw in the 2112 Overture from 2112 from the year 1976, just for myself. Now, I know that 2112 is just a big song about, it's just a giant sci-fi extravaganza, and there's lasers, and there's explosions, and there's a story, of course. There's an elder race and high-tech priests, and music is a weapon against fascism, and that's all well and good, and it's very 1976, and I don't care. I don't care about any of that plot line. This is it's the rhythms that I'm concerned with here. It's the blatant use of simple-to-play open chords. I think it's a deceiving song. You can understand how to form all those chords and get the whole bass line down. It's still really hard to play correctly. There's a tone here. There's a feeling, kind of a sense of urgency and triumph that rolls past the simplicity of the music and becomes something more, and something anthemic, maybe a vibration on a higher frequency, which really, that's what Neil would have wanted. So anyway, that's my choice, and I'll throw that in there.
But Jeff?
Yes?
How does the song end?
Look, are you going to give me hell just because there is one line? There is one line, and it doesn't make any sense within the rest of the context of that whole thing. I still say it's
But
an
it's not an
instrument.
instrumental, dude. Come on.
There's a line. There are not lyrics. It is a line.
I
Come
don't know. It's
on.
not, I don't know, buddy. It's not like, in Malignant Narcissism, the line is buried. So I don't know. But okay, you know what? I hear what you're saying.
I think there's an equitability there between 2112 and Malignant Narcissism as far as the lines go.
One nobody else has ever thought of before that we know of.
Isn't there a live version of Strangiato where Geddy yells something right in the middle of it? Might be on Next to Stage Left.
Maybe he yells, "Where's my thing?"
He might. He might consider. He might tell people he's the gangster of boats. It could happen. Well, really, if we've learned anything today, it's that rock and roll doesn't need good lyrics or even bad ones to count as excellent music, and it doesn't need to be about sex or drugs. It could be about airports. That's fine. Listen, please tell us what your favorite Rush instrumental songs are in the comments, and check out the video links in the article below to listen to the entire songs. Thank you, fearless leader at BBP, Andy Burns, for being here. You want to throw out a pitch for the website and all that?
Yeah, wow. People should definitely always visit us at biffbampop.com. So much good content coming through. And also, heading into the holidays, we're going to have our holiday gift guide, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be some cool rock related stuff that people want to check out. And because this show that you're doing every week is fucking fantastic, and I'm so glad that you do it, and it sounds great. And let's hope for 100 more.
Let's do it. Thank you for that, by the way. That was very kind. Anyway, he is Andy Burns. I am Jeffrey X. Martin, and until next time, see, there's nothing. There's no, it's just music. I'm just going to play music here because it fits. It fits, right? See, just.
The meek shall inherit the earth.
Dun 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 dun